During a global pandemic, how can we find comfort in the hymn, From God Can Nothing Move Me? You'll find the answer in Pastor Will Wheaton's column on Lutheran Dirges and Such in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, rapper Flame details his journey from Bapticostal and Reformed Baptist Calvinism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Show me the one whose safety deemed such destruction. You must reunite it with its own kind.
Where?
This you must determine. The songs of eons past tell of battles between Mandalore the Great and an order of sorcerers called Jedi.
You expect me to search the galaxy and deliver this creature to a race of enemy sorcerers?
This is the way.
That's the trailer for season two of the Disney Plus TV series called The Mandalorian. This is obviously in the Star Wars genre, and yet people who really didn't have much time for Star Wars in its long, long history have found The Mandalorian very compelling storytelling. It has, well, similar cast of characters, the same set pieces, the same locations, a lot of Easter eggs, but that's not what they're looking for. They just like the story that it's telling. Are there themes that might interest a Christian when they're watching The Mandalorian? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be reviewing season two of Disney Plus's TV series, The Mandalorian. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
For those who aren't familiar with it, what is this TV series, The Mandalorian, and why has it been such a hit among not only Star Wars fans, but even a younger generation that don't have Star Wars in their repertoire?
Well, for a couple of reasons. We went into quite a lot of detail about this when we recapped the first season. Like, we kind of talked about the entire season in one go. So I direct people to go take a listen to that in the archives of Issues, etc. But I'll just say that what it does is this Mandalorian TV show, which is on Disney Plus, it's a live action Star Wars TV show that's starting its second season right now, is that it kind of honors what the core original fans of Star Wars were interested in, and includes all the Easter eggs and stuff, but it's not like pandering necessarily, because it's really just giving an expanded version of this Star Wars universe in a mysterious kind of unfolding way that is intriguing and includes lots of wonderful, interesting characters. So you get that. And I think that kind of dovetails into why a new generation of people might find it so fascinating. A, because a lot of young families, you know, actually have purchased Disney Plus to watch in their home. So they're being given an opportunity to see this. It's not available elsewhere. But also, it's the kind of thing that parents and kids can watch together. There's not a bunch of like sex or curse words in it. The violence is, you know, minimal. It's not gratuitous. And it's kind of a great introduction into, or a continuing on of, the original Star Wars stories, because this takes place right after The Return of the Jedi, which came out in 1983. So the original three films, this starts within 5 years of that storyline wrapping up. So it's kind of in the post-Return of the Jedi world.
The last time we talked about The Mandalorian, you pointed out that this is really the thing that makes a Mandalorian is not his race or his species, but in fact, a religious commitment. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, there is a planet within this story called Mandalore, and there are these Mandalorians that are native of the place, but people can be grafted into it, and they can take on this creed, which has a religious element to it as well. So it kind of is almost like a warrior monk kind of credo. And the character of the Mandalorian in the first season, who he's often referred to as Mando for short, he himself was an orphan who was saved from the clutches of an attacking droid army during the Clone Wars by Mandalorians and then raised as their own and trained by them. And then he took the Creed to be his own as well. So, and in the last episode, I think, of the first season, in episode 8, he says that it's a creed, not a people exactly. So there's this sense in which people can be grafted into it. And I think as Christian viewers, this is something we could understand, thinking about what we have in the New Testament and promises even in the Old Testament of the Gentile world being grafted into the promises of Israel that God has given to the children of Israel. So I think that this is something that Christian viewers would twig on and hopefully notice.
The other character that is the constant here is kind of a non-speaking role and usually referred to as Baby Yoda. Explain that to us.
Yeah, Baby Yoda is the what the internet had deemed the character. In the show, it's referred to as the child. First, the asset, and then the child, because when the bounty hunter, the Mandalorian, discovers what the asset actually is that he's being contracted to deliver to an imperial officer, he realizes that this is actually like a little kind of seemingly defenseless child. And it reminds him of his own time as an orphan being rescued from the clutches of the droid. So he makes a 180 and decides that this is not ethically within his ability to just hand this child over to the Empire or the remnants of the Empire as they are, it looks as though they're going to do, I don't know, scientific experiments on it or something. So it is an adorable character. And what is discovered along the way is that he has force abilities, and then the two of them kind of forge a unbreakable bond with each other. And it's kind of almost like a father and a son, kind of a character driven connection that these two have with each other, with that theme of adoption right in the center of it.
So how does the second season begin?
Well, it ended off with the Mandalorian narrowly escaping with the help of some of his friends, some of which started out as enemies, became friends along the way. For instance, this IG-11 droid, assassin droid, who had been reprogrammed, who sacrificed his quote-unquote life so that, you know, the child and the Mandalorian could escape. They narrowly escape this character of Moff Gideon, who's the kind of superior officer to the client who is trying to get the asset for himself. And now they're kind of going off into the galaxy with the job of trying to return the child to his home world and own people. But then again, that's challenging because no one recognizes this alien species, and they don't know where this home world is. So now he's being set off on a quest given to him by a fellow Mandalorian, an armorer who had been giving him his armor through the first season. And he's seeking out other fellow Mandalorians to help in his new quest of finding the home world of the child. And that's the way the last season ended, and that's the way the first season begins, with him getting word that there is a Mandalorian on a planet in the Outer Rim, and it's the planet of Tatooine, which he'd been to before in the previous season, and that's where the first episode, Chapter 9, of the whole saga that's unfolding, but Episode 1 of Season 2, that's where it is centered.
So he is on his new quest to find the home planet of this child, as you said. And the word that there's another Mandalorian is his means of tracing the child back to its origins?
Well, it's his means of getting assistance or help, additional help in doing it. Instead of being alone in it, he's seeking out other Mandalorians to help in his quest to find that world. And of course, this whole plot really revolves around or benefits greatly by dramatic irony. Because, you know, like the internet, and like you had mentioned, refers to the child as Baby Yoda, because as viewers, we know who Yoda is. but the main characters that are involved in this don't even know who Yoda is. This is where it's like a real side story in the Star Wars universe. The central characters from the films that people knew about are not necessarily ones that anybody knows about in this world. Those stories are separate from these. So, you know, the fact that, you know, we recognize that this is the same species as Yoda is not something that gets discussed in the show. This is a dramatic irony. In the same way that when he finds out that there's another Mandalorian on Tatooine and he goes to look for him, the audience knows that the last Mandalorian that they knew about on the planet of Tatooine was Boba Fett, and that who had been introduced in The Empire Strikes Back in 1980 and then in 1983 in The Return of the Jedi was last seen being swallowed up into the belly of a Sarlacc pit, kind of a means of getting rid of people you don't like that Jabba the Hutt was using. So that we kind of know that. This is the dramatic irony. The characters don't know this. So that's kind of we're on a little bit on the inside of the story, even when the characters aren't. And that's a fascinating part of the show as well.
Okay, so I don't want to give away too much, but we're going to have to talk a little bit about how the first episode progresses. He goes looking for this other Mandalorian to help him. And he goes right back to kind of the staging ground for the beginning of everyone's Star Wars experience, the planet where Luke Skywalker grew up.
Exactly. And we go to a town that we'd not previously known. It's a little mining town. And it's kind of almost like a Western sort of story. You know, like you get these old Western films and then they got watched by directors like Akira Kurosawa. And then he went and was inspired to make samurai films. And you get like things like The Seven Samurai. And then that comes back to America in a remake of The Magnificent Seven. And you get like this idea of a town that's beset upon that needs to be saved. And the lone gunman who comes to town and then inspires the town folk to like stand up and help defend themselves. It's kind of a takeoff on that. Because what he finds when he arrives in this town is a situation in which they need to be rescued, not by from bandidos, but from this big monster that lives nearby called a crate dragon. So, I mean, in order to talk about this, we do have to spoil some things. So hopefully people have watched this first episode. If you have not and you're just interested in knowing what's going on, then, you know, like, please continue to listen, you know, but we do need to kind of talk about some things because there's a central key theme that I think is going to be really important that we need to talk about. And it really, we need to spoil a couple things in order to do that.
So is it Boba Fett's armor that the Marshal, is that the tie back to the original?
Yes, it is. Like when he arrives in town, when the Mandalorian Mando arrives in town, he thinks that he finds Boba Fett, but it's not Boba Fett. Well, he doesn't know that it's Boba Fett. He thinks he's found the Mandalorian that he's looking for, but it's actually just somebody wearing the armor. So what had happened was is that this guy had managed to get the armor off of some Jawas, and he went back to his town and wore the armor to protect the town from a criminal element that grew up as a result of the Empire crashing in defeat at the end of Return of the Jedi. So there's these outside interests, and then there's also these local Tusken Raiders that are also besetting the town, a little bit like bandidos. And this individual, Cobb Vanth, who's played by Timothy Oliphant, he has the armor, and he's wearing the armor, and he's using it to protect the town. So this is when the Mandalorian finds him and quickly realizes that this is not actually a fellow Mandalorian. He basically enters into a contract with him to save the town, but then get the armor in return because he needs the armor as he continues on his quest to find those Mandalorians. And really, the armor is so much part of their creed and their religion that just anybody shouldn't be wearing it. So he wants to retrieve it for his own people.
In fact, he knows it's not a Mandalorian because the guy removes his helmet to talk to him, and there's something sacred about their identity being entirely known through their armor.
Exactly. And it seems like there's probably a couple different versions of this the way that he follows as a Mandalorian, because the real Star Wars nerds who have been watching also things like the Clone Wars cartoons that are also on Disney Plus, and things like Star Wars Rebels, which is also on Disney Plus, will know that there are Mandalorians that take their helmet off. But his creed is one where in which he does not take his helmet off. And that's the way that it's presented in the previous season. And this guy just instantly pops it off. So at the very least, he's not someone who shares in the same creed exactly that he does.
We're talking with Pastor Ted Geese about season two of the Disney Plus TV series, The Mandalorian. When we come back, he had mentioned that he wanted to talk about a theme. We'll get to that next. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
This is a message for pastors and lay leaders of Missouri Synod congregations. As we enter the last quarter of 2020, how are you doing and how's your church doing? What has the COVID lockdown done to your attendance and giving? In 25% of our churches, giving's actually gone up. So why are some churches struggling and others thriving? Here at LCMS Stewardship and the whole Office of National Mission team, we have answers and we have help for you and your church today. LCMS.org/stewardship.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You eat his body and you drink his blood? That's the same surprise that many people had when they first heard about the Christian faith and the practice of communion and partaking of Christ's body and blood from the altar. The November issue of the Lutheran Witness is all about the Lord's Supper, our fellowship together, our fellowship with other church bodies, and the practice of close communion. Pick up your copy today to learn more at cph.org/witness. You can also visit witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
We need something that's going to endure. And Jesus says he's got it. He can give it.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
So the bread of life lasts. The bread of life is Jesus himself. And the bread of life is free.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about season two of the Disney Plus TV series, The Mandalorian. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. Ted, before the break, you said that there was a theme that you noticed in this first episode. What was it?
Well, I think the interesting thing that, like, I was thinking about the previous season, and when we sat down to watch the first episode now, this episode called The Marshal, I was thinking about all of this and I was watching it unfold, and the theme is kind of one of, well, first of all, righteous rejection of evil and then a path of redemption. So this made me think of the work that he does as a bounty hunter. So I think that this is one of these vocations. Like, as Lutherans, we think about vocation, and we also think about, like, godly vocations and then vocations that might be a wicked vocation. So, for instance, you know, you could be the best gangster in town, but you're still a criminal. This would not be a godly profession. You know, when you have a job like a bounty hunter takes contracts. And if he takes a contract to do something from somebody who has a wicked intention and he follows through on it, ethically, he would be following a path that would lead to wickedness and evil. But if a bounty hunter takes, like, a contract with, let's say, like, a legitimate government that needs to have something done that has a legally upstanding end, then he would actually be fulfilling justice. So, for instance, if there's a warrant that's out, a complicated warrant out for a lawful arrest, or if there's the retrieval of stolen goods or something like that, then a bounty hunter could be doing something that would be beneficial to the society in general and not be a evil thing. So what you have with the character of the Mandalorian in the first season is that he instantly discovers that, or when he sees the child, he realizes that this contract is not what he thought it was, and it's actually leading him down a path that would be evil. So he resists that temptation and in fact puts his life at risk in order to protect the child. And that kind of was in my mind as I was watching this first episode. And then there were some things that leads me to believe that this is a theme that they're going to continue to develop. So the scripture passage that popped into my mind was from 1 Corinthians chapter 10, where St. Paul says, "Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it." And what we saw in the last season is that the Mandalorian, his way of escape was the child. And he took that way of escape and he endured the consequences of it righteously right through to the end of the first season. And this kind of sets things up because you see other characters in the course of the first season who, because of the child or the child's relationship with the Mandalorian, also take different paths or rise to the occasion to help in ways that were righteous and good. So this is kind of the theme that I saw really doubled down on, I think, in the first episode now of the second season.
They have to go after what is essentially a classic dragon. And you can see that the writers and the director are kind of playing on a theme of a hero that comes and destroys, a very common trope in literature.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A hero
yeah.
comes up and he frees the townspeople from something that's terrorizing them.
This is St. George and the Dragon kind of stuff too, right?
But he yeah. does it by eliciting the cooperation of enemies.
Yeah, he has a friendly admiration and respect for the Tusken Raiders. And he's able to broker a peace between them and the town folks. So this is like, if it was the Magnificent Seven or, you know, the Seven Samurai, this is like the samurai coming to town and convincing the banditos and the townspeople to band together to fight a greater evil that is endangering both of them. This is the way that it's done. And then it becomes a cooperative effort to get rid of the dragon. And this is also a little bit of an Easter egg, because when R2-D2 and C-3PO first drop onto Tatooine in the very first film from 1977, in the desert, there's a scene with C-3PO walking along, and there's a big, like the bones of a dragon off in the background, and it's the same sort of creature as that, is the Easter egg part. So yeah, this is a classic dragon, and it's also an Easter egg for the Star Wars fan.
There is also self-sacrifice. In the end, they must improvise how to destroy this creature, and it's the Mandalorian who essentially puts himself in harm's way.
Yeah, he makes himself part of the bait so that he could be swallowed by the dragon, and then from the inside out, manage to kill the dragon. So, and this is one of these things where he has to kind of say, listen, he knows that he might not survive this. So he entrusts the child to someone else in order to be able to sacrifice himself. So this is, and then in the end, he actually survives, which allows the show to carry on. But it does kind of hint at the fact that maybe there might be a point where he doesn't survive, but he needs to be able to lay his life down for the child and also for the circumstance that he's in.
So what do you think this portends for this second season of The Mandalorian, the way they decided to begin it?
Well, when the first season came out, they kept secret from the internet and from prying eyes and from any leaks the fact that the asset was this baby Yoda, the child. And that was the big surprise. And it was also a surprise that that was the central theme or the central plot of the story was revolving around this. Nobody really knew that that was going to be the case. They just knew that it was going to be the story about a Mandalorian. And some people even at that time speculated that this Mandalorian might actually be Boba Fett. But nobody knew. And it was kind of a mystery. And we didn't know where it was going. Well, this time around, they weren't really able to keep it completely a secret, and maybe they didn't want to, but the character of Boba Fett is a part of the unfolding story at this point. And this is, again, a major spoiler, but at the end of the episode, there is a big reveal, and the big reveal is the actor who had played, this is getting deep in the weeds, but the actor who played this character, Jango Fett, in one of the prequel films, The Attack of the Clones, he is shown on camera watching the Mandalorian leave with Boba Fett's armor. And from that Attack of the Clones, the character of Jango Fett, he's the source of the genetic material for all of the clone army. But he had also asked to have a clone for himself that he could raise as his own son. So, you know, I'll use air quotes, you know, he's not really exactly a father, but he's acting as a father to this son. That son grows up to become Boba Fett. So now you have the same actor who should look the same because he's a clone. There he is looking on and seeing the Mandalorian leave with his armor. So everything points in the direction that this is actually Boba Fett. So then that again is what really got me thinking about this idea of redemption. So what potentially could be part of season two? Well, dramatically, it could be the question about whether or not, if that is Boba Fett, the question is, will he continue to be an antagonist, a villain within the story? Or will he too be provided a way of escape via Mando, this Mandalorian, and the child? That is, I think, the big question about where season two might end up going as it stands at the end of this episode.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to Chaplain Jonathan Shaw for his 32 years serving the U.S. Army, and congratulations on your retirement. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces supports almost 200 chaplains who represent the church on active duty, the reserves, the National Guard, and Civil Air Patrol. Find out more about their work at lcms.org/armed forces, serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armed forces. In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., our series on the words of Scripture continues with Pastor Will Whedon. We continue a conversation on righteousness in Psalms, Proverbs, and the Prophets. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.